As I mentioned this morning, we're finishing our series of lessons on the family, and in particular, raising godly children. We've spent a lot of time talking about the text that's on the board in Deuteronomy chapter 6 throughout this series of lessons, and the importance of Moses and talking to probably the oldest in the group would have been the grandparents, and there would have been very few grandparents in Deuteronomy chapter 6. And he educates those fathers that are present, those grandfathers that are present, to teach their children. And not just teach their children about anything in life, although those things are good and necessary, but in particular, teach their children about God. And not only about God, but how to respect God. I believe that that is becoming a lost thing in our day and time. Why are there so many different religious bodies out there? People fail to appreciate the authority of God. And so anything goes. We can vote things in and out in the religious world. And it's just not so. That's not what we find in Scripture. And so what we've lost along the way is a deep respect for who God is and what He's done for us and continues to do for us. And how He's in charge of everything. And these are things that we need to instill in our children. And so as we look tonight and finish up our series of lessons, I hope that this has been a benefit to you. I won't go in and say all the things I did this morning, but I have found out through these series of lessons that I've missed it big time as a parent. There are things that I was struggling to make sense of, and it's become vividly clear to me now where I have been lacking as a father. And that's my hope and desire for you, that if you're lacking in some area, that these series of lessons have helped you appreciate your responsibility, whether as a father or as a mother. And that far above just realizing where you lack, that you put it to practice in your life. You commit yourself to excelling as being a parent. We mentioned this morning, there were several thoughts that we ran with. We've got several visitors amongst us, and so I'm not going to give the sermon in its entirety tonight, but I just expressed some thoughts this morning that there are some things that are worth fighting for. We can look through Scriptures, and there is a text that would teach us to shun profane babblings and getting in crazy arguments with people. Get away from those circumstances. There are some fights that are not worth fighting. However, when we talk about our children, that is a fight that's worth fighting for. And we must fight for. And that's what we see in Deuteronomy chapter 6, in the express writing there where it says, teach your children when they rise up, when they sit down, when they lay down. Whatever opportunity we can, teach them. And continue to teach them. And fight if the fight needs to be fought. Our children are worth fighting for. And sometimes that fight involves fighting our own self. I've always wanted a pontoon boat. I don't really know why I've always wanted a pontoon boat, but it's something I've always wanted. But you know what? It's not something I need. And if I buy a pontoon boat, it's going to come into play for a couple of weekends, and then guess what happens? It gets put in the shed and I never look at it again. But you know what ends up happening? I need to pay for that. And there are a lot of things that we desire here on this earth. But I'm here to say this morning, as we look at Scriptures, that if those pursuits, those desires take us further away from our family than we need to be, then we ought not to take on those responsibilities. This is serious. And fighting for our children and fighting for the souls of our children should be at the top of our list in fights that we want to have and should have on a regular basis in our life. And so those were some of the thoughts that we looked at. Matthew chapter 7 deals with the idea as Jesus is presenting some thoughts, and he says to those of us that are evil, we know how to give good gifts to our children. Why not teach our children and lead our children to Christ? Right? He knows what's best for us. He knows what's best for our children. And so don't be so concerned about what your children have and do not have physically, but be very concerned about who they have and who they don't have in their life as they walk on this side of eternity. We also expressed the thought as we began with 10 things I want my child to know, the first one being that they were a special creation of God. You are made in the image of God. He created us male and female. With all those lovely desires that each sex has, He created us. And one of the great responsibilities that we have as parents is to teach them those very principles. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And you go from the beginning in Genesis chapter 1 through a couple of chapters and you begin to realize God's greatest creation was mankind, you and me. You and me. And we talked about how kids in the school systems are going to learn about the Big Bang Theory. And scientists and books that they're going to read are going to try to teach them that they're here and their existence today because it just happened. One of our great responsibilities as parents is to teach our children that they are created specially. They are, as Psalm 139 and verse 14 teach us, they were fearfully and wonderfully made. That's an awesome thought to think about. And this learning, this understanding of this begins at home. It begins with parents teaching that very foundational lesson. It all begins with that. We also talked this morning how they are to be loved unconditionally. Somebody brought it to my attention this morning. Well, does that mean that if my child is in sin, I'm to do nothing? No. Loved unconditionally. Love isn't a fuzzy feeling that we have. Love is a choice. I'm to choose to love my children unconditionally. If they're in sin, they need to be dealt with. Discipline needs to be had. If they've excelled and are doing good in an area, they're to be praised. They're to be recognized. They're not just to be seen and not heard. That's the principle. Appreciate your children and love them unconditionally. Okay, so let's get to our thoughts tonight. In Job chapter 1, let's turn over there for just a second. Just briefly, I was talking to Heather before services, and I hadn't heard this story. Apparently, there was a situation in the news, and I believe it was in Texas, if I remember correctly, and there was a young man who killed somebody else, and he stood trial for this. And he was a very privileged young man, had all the benefits that this life would offer. His parents were very, very wealthy. And so he faced this trial, and as the trial ended, although he was guilty, he was found not accountable for it. Affluence. Do you know what that is? We're going to talk about that in just a moment from now. Affluence. It's a sickness. And if not careful, it's a sickness that we breed and pass down to our children. I said this morning, and I mean it with the utmost truthfulness this morning. Even the poorest in this country is a millionaire compared to some of the other countries that are in poverty. We say if we don't have a 62-inch TV, if there's a TV that exists that big, we're not doing too well in life. If we don't own a big home, well, we're not doing too well in this life. We don't drive a newer car. If our car gets 10 years old, guess what we do? Some of us complain about it. You see, affluenza is a sickness. It penetrates our hearts and our minds. Life begins to become about things instead of Him. And we need to appreciate that in our life, that thought, and understand that and be very aware of it as we live our lives on this side of eternity. In Job chapter 1 and in verse 21, this is what is stated for us. Job chapter 1. And in verse 21, and he said, "Naked I came from my mother's womb, and naked I shall return there. The Lord gave, and the Lord taketh away. Blessed be the name of the Lord." I've mentioned this several times. One of my favorite songs right now is, "Blessed be the name of the Lord. He gives and He takes away." That's what the chorus says. He gives and He takes away. But I will choose to praise Him. And that's where we need to be as we live our lives on this side of eternity. There are some individuals that are very wealthy. I know some Christians that are very wealthy, and they do a lot of good with that wealth. I know some Christians that are pretty to do and fail to help those that are less privileged than them, even in the body of Christ. There's a problem there. Big problem there. What are we allowing into our minds? What are we allowing to control our minds? Job chapter 1, verse 21 teaches us, you came into this world with nothing, and you better understand that you'll leave this world with nothing as well. Everything that you accumulate as far as things are concerned on this side of eternity will be left to somebody else. And if you have not done your job as a parent as you ought to, you're going to leave it to children that are not appreciative of what you've done and the sacrifices that you've made in your life. Maybe you breed the sickness to which we talked about just a moment ago. We need to be mindful of that. I like what Wilson Adams says. He says this about this thought. Don't you think that that is influencing our kids? Perhaps it is best summarized by the bumper sticker that says, the one who dies with the most toys, what? Wins. You've seen it, right? You've all seen that bumper sticker. You've seen it probably on the back of some black or red pickup truck in the back mirror and the back window. And Wilson Adams goes on to say this. I want to ask that person, what do they win? What do I win? When we look at Job chapter 1 and verse 21, it teaches us even if we have the biggest toys, the biggest house, and the biggest bank account, really, what have you won? Matthew would teach us, what if you gain the whole world and lost your own soul? What have you really gained? You've not gained anything. You see, in the grand scheme of things, that bumper sticker is funny when we see it and funny when we read it, but I'll tell you, it's not funny when you understand the implications of it. Many a children suffer under parents who live by that very standard. If I have the biggest toys, I win. Look around. Look around. Maybe you have some of these friends. Maybe if you're being honest with yourself, maybe you're one of the ones that maybe live a little bit by this standard. Your kids don't have to have everything, and there's nothing wrong with us saying no to our children. I know an individual that's pretty well-to-do, and you would never know it because he doesn't drive the fanciest of cars, he doesn't live in the biggest of houses, and his kids all have jobs, and these kids all drive cars that aren't in the greatest of shapes. Why? I'll tell you why, because he's teaching his children a strong work ethic and how important that is. And not everything is going to be given to them on a silver platter with a silver spoon. It just doesn't work that way. It shouldn't work that way. We're bringing a society where our children are getting to that age and they're looking for a job, but they don't want to get into the entry-level position. They feel that they deserve a supervisor position. You see, this is what we're breeding today. This attitude and this mentality. As parents, Ryan, I centered you out this morning. Are you going to fight your children on this? You are, aren't you? You see, this is a battle we need to fight with our children. Help them understand and appreciate this principle. Your kids don't need everything. It's okay to say no. And I'll tell you, that's a lesson I'm starting to learn, and I'm starting to learn the hard way because I did the exact opposite for several years with my kids. Tried to give them everything that I could. And I found at the end of the day, it was making my kids more crazy and more mean than they needed to be. It's okay to say no. Help them to see God in everything. Is it wrong to go to Disney and show your kids all the grandeur of that place? No. But along the way, why don't you stop and show them the Grand Canyon? Walk outside in the middle of the night and show them the stars. You see, it doesn't cost anything. I've done that with my kids. We've come home after church and we'll stand out in Whiteland in the middle of the dark and my kids will say, what are we doing? We're getting ate by mosquitoes. And I'll tell them, look up. There's the stars. Brother Dan's been over. He's brought his telescope over. We've looked through the telescope at many different things in the sky. Help them to appreciate that God can be seen in everything. You don't have to spend $1 million on a vacation to appreciate God and teach your children about God. Hopefully we understand this as parents. The important things in life can't be bought. And that is so true. We also need to teach our children that their choices have consequences. We are raising a generation of kids today where there are no consequences for anything. I don't know how many times I've heard this. I don't spank my children. And my response is, I know. I can see it. I don't discipline my children. I try to encourage them with loving words. I know. I see it. God has stated it right. We've been through this. We've studied about discipline and how we need to be actively involved in our children's life. They need to be taught there are consequences. What happens when they don't study? They get a bad grade, right? You as teachers know very well, you give a child a bad grade, what's going to happen? A parent's going to come knocking on your door, sending you emails or phone calling and complaining about the grade that you gave their child, right? That's the society that we're living in. And heaven forbid that if we as Christians teach our children to respond this way, and shame on us for parents when we act that way. If they don't study, guess what happens? We shouldn't be surprised when they get a low grade. That's a consequence for it. Think about it this way as well. If our young children are going to be sexually active, don't be surprised when they get sick, when they get a disease, when they are found with child, heartbroken because of the young boy that promised them the world but yet left them. You see, there are consequences to our choices. A young person that drinks, there's a chance that they're going to get drunk. There's a chance that maybe rape will be involved. They could hurt their body or somebody else's body, or just as bad, most of them can't even remember what they did the last night or even what happened to them. You see, there are consequences to taking that first drink, that first sip. There are consequences come from it. And we need to start teaching our children that. You don't work. You shouldn't eat. There are serious consequences to their choices. And much of today's education is focused on exploring all their choices instead of helping them make the one right choice. You see, and that's where it comes down to us as parents. Help them understand all of these things. These are good and necessary. And there's valuable opportunities, as Deuteronomy chapter 6 teaches us, to take advantage of every one of these opportunities. Now, I hope I never have to deal with any of these things. Here, the first one, okay. maybe that one. These other ones, I hope I never have to deal with them. But there's a good chance I have five of them. There's a good chance at some point, preacher's kid or not, I'm going to have to deal with some of these things. And I hope when those times come, I don't turn a blind eye or praise my child or do as we talked about not long ago with Eli, just tell him, well, you brought shame upon us and that's all, that's the extent that it goes to. Hopefully they understand that there are consequences with their actions. And hopefully along the way they understand that as parents we want nothing but the best for them. And along the way we help them make right choices. And in particular, help them to choose the right mate. And long before that comes in the picture, help them to understand and appreciate and choose to serve God. Choose to serve God with all their heart, with all their soul, with all their mind, and with all their strength. You see, there's consequences to that as well. But those consequences are good. They need to understand there's a right There's a right and a wrong. Again, I believe that this is a principle that is getting cloudier and cloudier as the days roll on. The world may preach and teach our children to be tolerant towards evil and even accept it. But that doesn't change the fact that there is a right and there is a wrong. And we need to help our children understand that principle. If you will, turn over to Ephesians chapter 6 for just a moment. We think about life and think about your children. Who determines what's right and what's wrong? I'll tell you as a parent, if you send your kids into the school systems and you fail to pay attention to what's going on and be actively involved in what they're learning and taking advantage of all those opportunities to teach and implement God, guess what's going to happen when they graduate high school? Maybe when they get into college, they're going to leave the faith. They're going to be taught a lot of things. They're going to be subjected to a lot of false ideas in the school system. So what do? We pull them out? That's not what we've chosen to do. Somebody else might do that and take that, and that's up to them. But for my children, I'm going to take every opportunity to teach and combat what the school system's teaching. And we need to understand that in our life. There is a right and there's a wrong. Just because a teacher says this is right doesn't make it so. I will also say just because a parent says this is right doesn't automatically make it so. But hopefully if we are God-fearing children and we are God-fearing parents, as what we find in Deuteronomy chapter 6, the lessons that we teach our children are right. They are proper. And they understand the line between right and wrong. Again, that is getting cloudy as the time rolls on. In Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 1, children, obey your parents in the Lord. For this is what? Right. It's right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise. And then it goes on to say this. This is the reason that it may be well with you and you may live long on the earth. I've understood parents to say to their children, I brought you into this world and I can take you out. I don't believe that that's what this is talking about here in this verse. But there is a reason for children to obey your parents. They've been down those roads. They've watched other children, their friends, take those roads. They've seen the destruction and devastation that comes with that road. And so with their wisdom, they instruct their children, don't do this. Stay away from that. And when children choose to respect their parents and choose to listen, it saves them heartache and pain down the road. And there's a good chance with some of the things that we looked on this prior board, there's a reason why they tell you, don't drink. There's a reason why they tell you, don't be sexually active before you're married. There's reasons for that. It's not that your parents are trying to be hard-nosed about things. They just understand God's way is best. It's best. So there is a right and there's a wrong. And your parents, if they are Christians and understand the scriptures, will lead you in the right ways. You know, it's kind of interesting. When Moses came down off of the mountain, he didn't come down with the 10 suggestions, did he? He didn't come off the mountain with 10 suggestions for the children of Israel. He came down with the 10 commandments, right? Thou shall not. A clear line between right and wrong. There's lots of other verses that we could turn to. Verses like 1 Peter chapter 3 and verse 17. To express this truth even into a greater extent. We need to also teach our children to have courage. They must be willing to stand up when the force is against them, even if they are the only ones standing for what is right. We think about men like Daniel, like Joseph. These are our men, Ruth, men and women that we need to gear our children towards. When the tough gets going, those that are tough stand up. I've seen many a church problems escalate because no one was willing to stand up. Nobody was willing to stand up and say, enough is enough. I've seen many families break apart between a husband and a wife because there was no courage in the home. And I've seen many a young people die and leave this life way too early because they didn't have the courage to say no to their friends. On the other hand, I know of some young people that are still here and alive today, even though their friends passed from this earth, because they had the courage to say, no, I'm not getting in that car. Brethren, that's one of our responsibilities as we live on this side of eternity, is to instill in our children the concept of courage. And that lesson is first seen in us. It must be displayed on a regular basis. In 1 Timothy chapter 4, let's turn over there for just a second. It needs and must be met with us. As our children see us interact with the trials of this life, the hardships that come our way, they need to see fathers and mothers acknowledge God and have faith and trust in Him that no matter the circumstance of life, God will provide. They need to see men and women with that kind of backbone. In 1 Timothy chapter 4, in verse 12, let no one despise your youth, but be an example to the believers in word and in conduct, in love, in spirit, in faith, and in purity. As Paul talks to young Timothy, he tells Timothy to have a backbone, to have courage. Why would that be needed in Timothy's day and time? There was a good chance that he was going to face hardships. He would enter into the groups of people that would not accept the message. But Peter told him to stand and stand firm. And not just stand on principles, but live the life that we've called you to live, right? That's what it's, be an example. Paul instructs Timothy to be an example. As people watch you, let them see that you're living out the faith that you claim to have in God. Parents, our children need to see this. Peer pressure is an awesome force. I know for some of us, it's hard for us to remember back when we were in school. Some of us have to think a lot longer and a lot harder than others. But if you can recall, peer pressure was an awesome force in your life. You had friends trying to pursue you and push you into doing something. You as an individual, you didn't really want to be part of the popular crowd, but you sure didn't want to be part of the unpopular crowd. As long as you were somewhere in between, you were okay. But you see, even to be in between, you could have very well submitted to this idea of peer pressure. It's hard. Our children are facing it today. It's just one pill. It's just one drink. It's just one puff. It's just a one-night stand. They are pressured in so many different ways. They might not understand the rules that you set for them. You mean what? I have to be in at what time? And you might explain to them, but they still don't grasp it. But see, you as a parent, you have the right to make them. And you have the right to enforce them. God has given you that privilege. He expects you to use that privilege. It's your blessing. You brought the child into this world. Raise them as God has told you to raise them. Courage is a must. And being a parent takes courage. To raise your children as God has told you to raise your children, it takes courage. You see, in order for our children to have courage, it starts with us. Help them to be 1 Timothy chapter 4, 12 kids. Help them to be somebody that does not look down upon the youth that your child possesses. Help your child be an example to those that are older in the congregation in word. The only way that they will be an example to the congregation is in word is if you've done your due diligence of what we find in Deuteronomy chapter 6. You've taught them laying down, sitting down in the grass, at school, at lunch at school, at home when they haven't cleaned the room, taking time and making time to sit down and read the Bible and teach your son or your daughter about God's Word. If they don't understand that, and if you failed to do your due diligence in helping them understand that, then their conduct and love and spirit and the faith that they are to possess, and definitely their purity, goes out the window. You see, it's your job as parents. We need to help our children understand this. Courage is a must. They also need to understand that human life is sacred. Jesus, on a daily basis, found himself with sinners and tax collectors. He found himself teaching and instructing, being with those, as we would refer to it, as coming from the opposite side of the tracks. Why is that? Jesus didn't come to be served, but to seek and serve that which is lost. Every life matters. And one of the things that our children need to start seeing again is us as parents visiting those that are sick and are hurting and are afflicted. And not just seeing us do this as we leave out the door, but taking our children with us to visit these sick people, these hurting people. It should be a norm in our home that we are leaving our house to go study the Bible with somebody. You see, every life matters. Every life is sacred. Human life is a gift given by the Almighty. And that's the lesson that we find Jesus teaching in Matthew chapter 7 and in verse 12 as he says this. Therefore, whatever you want men to do to you, do also to them, for this is the law and the prophets. We fail to understand that sometimes in our lives, don't we? We do. We need to be reminded of it. Very quickly, the last couple of points are very quick here. Hard work is worth it. We need to teach our children that. I mentioned this just a second ago. It's kind of interesting. We've moved from this idea of hard work into giving everything to our children. You know, you don't believe me? Drive down to the nearest high school and look in the parking lot. See what some of the children are driving nowadays. I remember whenever I got my license, I couldn't drive a car for several years. And when I finally got to drive a car, I'll tell you what it was not. It was not a new car. It had some rust spots on it. Matter of fact, it was held together by rust. And all of my friends had the same kind of cars. It's just not so anymore. A lot of the cars that we see in those high school parking lots are far greater than what we are driving ourselves. And we wonder, where did we go wrong that a young child who is yet to graduate high school drives a nicer car than me who has worked 40 years of my life? You see, but it goes back to the principles that we've been talking about here tonight. Colossians chapter 3 and verse 22, very quickly. Bondservants, obey in all things your master according to the flesh, not with eye service as men pleasers, but in sincerity of the heart, fearing God. And whatever you do, do it heartily as to the Lord and not to men. Verse 24, here's one of the key verses. Knowing that from the Lord you will receive the reward of the inheritance, for you serve the Lord Christ. At the end of the day, it doesn't really matter what you have. At the end of the day, it doesn't really matter what you've been paid. At the end of every day, have you done whatever you can to let the glory of God be seen? And that's what we see in verse 21. Whatever you do, do it heartily to the Lord, as to the Lord, and not to man. I tell you, whenever I had secular jobs, I know one of the things that I did not like is a lot of my supervisors, my bosses. I did my best to avoid them. But I'll tell you what I never did was shirk my responsibilities. I mentioned this one time, a job that I had was in a feed mill. And several of the guys there, as I worked there in the summer, several of the guys that would work there, they would go and hide in behind these bags of feed and sleep. They would sleep. They'd saw logs. The boss would come looking for them, ask where they were. We never knew where they were. And we had to continue shoveling and doing all the things that we needed to do. And these people that were sleeping got more pay than those that were actually doing the work. Sound like a job you've had? Maybe a job you have now? It can get pretty discouraging. But at the end of the day, who are we really working for? This verse teaches us God, right? Whatever you do, do it with all your might. Eventually, a boss or an employer is going to see through those things that are happening. And if they don't, oh well. Teach our children that hard work is worth it. Marriage is for life is one of those lessons that we need to teach our children as well. And far above just what we find in Matthew chapter 19 and verse 9 and going through all those lessons on divorce and remarriage, they need to be taught and must be taught. And our children need to understand the seriousness of the marriage relationship. But they should see this idea of marriage and how marriage is for life demonstrated in our own families. They should see a mother and a father love each other. Mother and a father that take their vows seriously. Some time ago, my boys, life is getting pretty crazy at my house. My girls are getting to that age. And between Heather and my three girls, I told my boys one time, hey, we've got a few acres of land. We're going to build a house out back. And my boys are constantly asking me, when are we going to build that house out back? And we laugh and we chuckle at something like that. But you know there are families that are living like that? Children pass to and fro from one family to the next family. Mother and father, limits of time that they can spend with each. It's definitely not how God planned things. It's not what we find in the book of Genesis when marriage was established. It's not how we should live our lives as Christians. We need to set the right example and find somebody who will help you get to heaven. I tell you, if we've done that with our children, and taught them that the paycheck doesn't matter. That helps. But that should not be the determining factor in who you're happy with when your child picks their spouse. Be happy if they pick somebody that is going to help your child get to heaven. I wish we could turn to several of these thoughts tonight, but we can't. I'm going to close with this. God comes first, and He comes first in everything. We need to teach our children that. God comes first, and He comes first in everything. Not some things, but in everything. Every single thing in this life. Now, that's where it gets a little bit hard for us. And as parents, maybe we don't feel so comfortable in swallowing that principle and understanding that thought. We as parents want to avoid that because it means that maybe we've got to change some things in our lives. Maybe it means we put our hobby on the back burner for a while. Maybe it means changing our jobs. Maybe it means not going to races. Maybe it means changing our life drastically. But I like what Ecclesiastes has to say. We're going to close with this. In Ecclesiastes chapter 12 and in verse 13, let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep His commandments, for this is man's all. For God will bring every work into judgment, including every secret thing, whether good or evil. We need to teach these lessons to our children. They need to understand if they're not living right, that there are consequences to not living right. And some of those consequences might mean being grounded, losing the keys to a car, the car for a week. Maybe it means study after school for a month. Whatever it might be. But use those times to teach that those consequences have an end. But to fall short of the glory of God, that's an ultimate consequence with no end. I would ask the question tonight, which one of us wants to see any of these children who are present in this building go to hell? How many of us would like to see that? None of us would we? We wouldn't want to see that. We wouldn't want to experience that for any child in this building, whether they're ours or not. But the fact and reality of it is, Jesus said in Matthew chapter 7, there are two roads. There are two roads. And at some point when our children leave our homes and they stand on their own two feet, they will pick one of those two roads. Do your work now to prepare them to choose that right road when that time comes. Maybe there are children amongst us that are here tonight that are at that age of accountability. They're there. We hope and pray tonight that this is a night that you choose your God. You choose to get your feet on that right path. You choose today is the day that my soul will be safe in the hands of my Lord. I hope that that's the choice you make tonight if you're not right with God. Maybe you're here tonight and you have chosen God along the way, but you've lost your way. It's time for you to come back home. Maybe some of the thoughts tonight, the lessons that you were to teach your children, you failed to practice them yourself. It's time for you to come home. And the wonderful thing is, we have a loving Father that has granted you the opportunity to get those shortcomings right with Him tonight. But in order for that to happen, you have to respond. So won't you do that tonight? Do you believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of the living God? Are you willing to confess it? Are you willing to return of your lifestyles? Are you willing to be baptized tonight? Are you willing to make that confession that you've sinned? If you're a Christian, there's a front row available. Maybe you don't feel comfortable. You raise your hand and I'll come to you. But please, tonight, make that request be made known. He is knocking. He's knocking on your door. Won't you let Him in tonight as we stand and as we sing?